So, not too long ago, two separate young people from this congregation came up to me and asked me a good question. Are we in this church a part of a denomination or not? I really appreciate receiving spiritual questions because it shows that the person who is asking them is really searching and interested in discovering the will of God and trying to do that. And I really hope that in this congregation we always have a culture of asking questions and being comfortable doing that, of not shooting anybody down at all for any question that they ask, regardless of what it is. Because as disciples of Jesus, he invites us to question everything that we do, as long as we press forward to him for the proper answers to those questions. But we ought to be able to ask anything. And so I really appreciate that question coming from two separate people. And so what I've decided to do is spend a whole sermon hour in this second slot devoted to that issue of, are we a denomination or not? And I want to make the case that the Bible presents this idea that the church, as is talked about there in Ephesians 4, that Matthew just read for us, the church is one. And it has always been one, and it will always be one, and it is not a group of groups, it's just one group. So it's not a denomination. We'll talk about what that means and dive into that in more depth today. We've got to talk about the meaning of the word, though, because when we talk about ideas like this, we've got to define our terms. We've got to be on the same page about what words mean. So what is a denomination? Well, if you just look it up in the dictionary, there's a basic meaning, and that is just a category of something or a division of something. And we use this word when we talk about money. We talk about the denominations of different paper bills that we have, like the $1 bill or the $5 bill or the $10 bill. Those are denominations. We can also talk about this in terms of like sports, for example. You think about who the Boston Red Sox are as a team. They are not by their lonesome. They are part of one team of many in the American League East Division. And that division is in itself a part of the American League. And the American League is one of two leagues that make up Major League Baseball as we know it today. And so they're a kind of division, a kind of category, a kind of denomination in and of themselves. But I think if you use that word to somebody on the street, they're probably not just going to think about money or sports or something like that. They're going to think about religions, especially the Christian religion. And so the religious meaning of this word denomination is this idea: a recognized, autonomous, or independent branch of the Christian religion. And so it's a particular collection of people with its own brand of teaching and its own brand of practices, its own spin on interpreting the Bible. A denomination usually has some sort of formal name that it attaches itself to. Like, we are all the Baptists, we're all the Methodists, we're all the Presbyterians, or we're all the Church of Christers. You know, I want to make the case that that's not how we should think, but that is how some people think. A denomination usually has some form of central government to it, just like you would see in a nation. Now, we got Washington, D.C., we got the Capitol building, we got the president sitting in the Oval Office, we got the Supreme Court. Well, man, because that's usually how mankind thinks. So we gotta centralize things. Sometimes you see that happening in different religions, in different organizations that call themselves followers of Jesus. You see the Vatican City, for example, that is kind of the headquarters of the Catholic Church. Now, if you ask a Catholic, by the way, are you part of a denomination, they will say no. They will say, no, we predate everybody else. We are the original Mother Church. But if you look back at the teachings of Jesus and where the Catholic Church is, they have decided to really become their own separate thing. So I'm counting them as a denomination, too, just for clarification there. A denomination is basically a splinter group. It says what it is, among many other splinter groups. And so what Jesus teaches, though, is different from that. And when you look at Ephesians 4, at the scripture that Matthew just read for us there in chapter 4, 4 through 6, what he teaches about his church is not that it is a group that is made up of all of these different branches like you see on a tree, or a piece of a pie, of many pieces of pie that make up the pie. It's just one group. There's just one Lord. There's not many lords. There's not many kings sitting on the throne in heaven. There is just Jesus at the right hand of the Father. He rules, and he rules his one group of saved people. And so when you read Ephesians 4, let's look again at those verses that Matthew read. Verse 4, there is one body and one spirit. Ephesians 4, 4, just as you were called to the one hope that belongs to your call, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. So the way that Jesus looks at us is not, okay, I got people over here who've got Church of Christ stamped on their forehead. I've got people over here with Methodist stamped on their forehead. They're all, no, what he does is he looks at people and he just says, okay, this person is in my group of saved people and this person is not. This person has been baptized into the one baptism to connect to my Son, and this person has not. This person has faith in me, and this person does not. That's his vantage point. But humans have really complicated this beautiful plan, which is really simple in and of itself. But we tend to make things a lot more complicated than we actually need to, that deviate from the plan of God. I want to talk about this. Are you aware that there are many, many different ways of talking about God's people? Of talking about the church? There's not just this one name that sometimes we tend to use to describe ourselves, the name that is on the side of this building over here on this side. By the way, I really appreciate about this group that we don't just call ourselves that, that we have a different sign that just says Christians Meet Here, because that's all that we are. But that is a name that Paul does use in Romans chapter 16, in verse 16. He talks about the churches of Christ. By the way, that is the only time in the entire New Testament that phrase is used. And it's talking about all of the local congregations that identify themselves with Jesus. It's not talking about the group of saved people, the churches of Christ. In 1 Corinthians 11:16, Paul talks about the churches of God. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 23, the Spirit talks about the church of the firstborn, church of Jesus. He's firstborn, not in the sense that he was created first, but that he has the preeminent position over the heavens and the earth and everything else. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15, we have the household of God. One of many places in the Bible where we get the sense that we are to think of ourselves as a family, not as this official, formal organization, but we are a family. And we are a household together, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, etc. 1 Timothy 3:15, also the church of the living God is another phrase that he uses in that verse. Ephesians 5:25, Paul just simply talks about the church. And the word church, as we talked about before, is not a religious word in the New Testament. It's a word that just simply means group or assembly. And so what I want to do is make sure that we don't overly formalize our view of the Scriptures and what it talks about, because the Scriptures themselves use words that are not formal. In their language, in the way that they thought of things, it's just a group. So Paul says, the group, to talk about the group of God's people. Galatians 5:25, he just simply says the churches of Galatia. So there are just all kinds of names that God provides us with to describe His people. And so we need to ask ourselves the question, when we talk about ourselves, amongst ourselves, or we talk about ourselves to other people outside of God's saved group of people, how do we describe ourselves? Are we only using that name at the front of the list? We can. Obviously, Paul talks in those terms. But if that is the only way that we describe ourselves, we might want to consider expanding our vocabulary a bit to include some of these other descriptions so that we and other people out there do not get the mistaken impression that we are one slice of the pie that makes up the Christian religion. That's not how we should think of ourselves. We're not a denomination, one branch of the tree amongst many branches of the tree that make up Christians and God's people. There's one body. There's one Lord. There's one faith. There's one baptism. Now, what I want to point out about this list is that you see the word church being described two different ways. So one of those ways is talking about the church as the total group of saved people. And 1 Timothy 3:15 is a really good example of what that looks like. So the full verse reads like this: "If I delay, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and buttress of the truth." Now, when Timothy got that letter, he was working in the city of Ephesus with the congregation of God's people there in that town. But what Paul is speaking of there in that verse is not what's going on in Ephesus. He's speaking of the overall group of whoever has come to Jesus and been saved. And so that doesn't include just the people there in that town. Obviously, as Herb talked about in his prayer just a minute ago, God's people are all over the globe. They are the church, but it's not just the people who are alive and working at any one time on the earth, because there's a lot of saved people who have passed, right? Who are dead. In fact, if I can find... there you go. If we just think about what the church is, this is one of the senses that we mean. You've got the Apostle Paul, who is writing this letter to Timothy, but you also have all these other ancient people who have gone before. You know, you don't open up Genesis and read the word church. You're just not going to see that. But isn't it true that Abraham is in the church? Isn't it true that Moses is in the church? Isn't it true that Daniel and Jacob and Barnabas, New Testament, Elijah, all these ancient characters are in the church? Absolutely they are. If we're just thinking about this as who is saved. And you can think about us too, in a modern day setting. We are in the church if we are saved and walking with the Lord in the light. And so those of us here that are doing that can be included in whatever this is talking about, God's total group of saved people. But then the Bible also uses the word church to speak of local communities of God's people. In 1 Corinthians 11:16, one of those scriptures on the board that we just saw is a good example of that. So that full verse reads like this: "If anyone is inclined to be contentious or argumentative, we have no such practice, nor do the churches of God." The churches of God. I thought there was just one church, one body. Well, this word is used to talk about local groups. And so in this context here in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul is talking about gender roles and men and women and how when we're in a culture, we should put on clothing. He's talking about the head covering there for women. We should put on clothing that reflects in our culture the gender role that God has given to us, and treat that respectfully so that other people can glorify God in that. And he says back in chapter 4, 1 Corinthians, "I teach this stuff everywhere I go, in every church. I don't teach something different when I go to Galatia as opposed to when I go to you guys in Corinth. It's all the same." So if you walk into a church
in Corinth, it ought to look pretty similar to any other church of Jesus that you walk into. They ought to be singing the same kinds of songs. They ought to be glorifying the same God, reading the same scriptures, praising and God in the same kind of way. It's going to look pretty similar, but there's no centralized government. There's no Pope at the center. There's no human pulling all the strings, sending out the email to all the churches, here's what everybody should teach today from this scripture and so on and so forth. Jesus is the ruler of all that. But so should we conclude then that what the church is made up of all these different little congregations, wherever they are. So to put it in our terms, the Christians that meet and are meeting today in Boston, Kyle and his wife, Hannah, and the Christians there that are doing such a good work, and the brethren that are meeting in Wallingford, and the brethren that are meeting in Lincoln, Rhode Island, that we know of, and us, and all of the other congregations that are meeting throughout the country today and the world, should we think about the church as just a collection of churches? And I want to suggest that that is the way that I thought growing up. That's what I thought about the church. Until it was pointed out to me that the church is not a group of groups. The church is one group of saved people. And the very fact is, when you read, for example, the book of Revelation, you read about the seven churches of Asia, you see some people who are walking with the Lord, but aren't there other people in those congregations who are not walking with the Lord? Thyatira, I think, has this woman called Jezebel in her, who is causing people to go off into sexual immorality. And God says, okay, some of you who are with me, you need to wake up and take care of these people who are not actually part of me. Now, they got their names in the directory. maybe they're showing up at worship services with everybody else, but they're not people who belong to Jesus Christ. So this is, and we'll get down to applications in a minute. That's part of why we know the church of Jesus isn't made up of all the churches. Because the fact is, not everybody necessarily who is a member of a local church is actually saved with Jesus. That's a sobering thought for me to think about for myself. And for all of us to think about, is just because we show up here and we sit in these pews and we do what we do with everybody else does not necessarily mean we are part of the church of Jesus. And that's the one that ultimately you want to be a part of, is that's the one that's going to be saved at the end of all this. So this is not the right way of thinking about the church. And this is not the right way of thinking about the church either, that it is just split up into all these different branches that have their own names, that have their own creeds, that have their own way of doing things. Not too long ago, well, it actually has been a while now, I was in a Bible study with, I believe he was a Baptist preacher. I could be wrong about that, but he was from another denomination. And in the course of the Bible study, what he did was he looked at me and he said, "You know what you are? You come out of Alexander Campbell and Barton W. Stone and the Church of Christ movement, and that explains, you know, why you're talking about these passages and the way you're talking about them is because that's who you are. You're a Church of Christ person." And I, on the other hand, I'm over here, and that's why we can't see eye to eye. And I just looked at her and I said, you know, I'm not in that kind of camp. I don't identify myself according to humans that came before me. I might be influenced by them in different ways. I might appreciate the good influence of their examples and their teachings, but I identify myself with Jesus. And that kind of goes to, why does this matter? Why are we talking about this? Does this seem a little technical to any of us who are sitting here? Are you wondering, okay, why are we spending so much time trying to parse this out and defining exactly what the church is and what it's not and my place in it? and talking about ourselves the right way? Well, because we have to identify ourselves with Jesus and no other man or movement. Now, when you look back at history, can you see some helpful men who did some helpful things? Yeah, absolutely. Everybody in here has probably heard of Martin Luther. Martin Luther went out of his way to try to identify the ways in which the Catholic Church was going off the rails. And he did not do everything perfectly, and I'm not suggesting that he did, or John Calvin, or a man named Ulrich Zwingli in Switzerland, or any of those guys that you could look at in the Reformation time period, in the 1500s and the 1600s. They weren't all the way right, certainly, about a lot of things. But they did some good, because they tried to point people back to Jesus. When you look at the early parts of our history, yes, you got a man named Alexander Campbell and Barton W. Stone who led the American Restoration Movement that we can look back on today and see some influences of. And Kevin is about to teach a class in the next quarter that moves us through church history and teaches us about some of these people. Because it is valuable for us to know about the past and how people have handled the Bible before us. You know, we don't just appear in a vacuum here in the 21st century. But having said that, we do not go back and say, well, I'm a Campbellite, or I'm a Stoneite, or I'm somebody who's a Calvinist, or any other person. We are to identify ourselves with Jesus and Him alone. And that kind of brings up the second matter of why we should be talking about this, is that when we do our kingdom work, and we are trying to reach people out there in our communities and bring them to Jesus, what are we bringing them to? Are we actually bringing them to Jesus? Or are we bringing them to our denomination, our church? We got to convert them to Him. You know, at this point in my life, I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people who talk about their spiritual journey with me. And that's what I ask them about every time we sit down, we have a Bible study for the first time. And they tell me about their lives. And if they've had some sort of background with Jesus before, sometimes they'll say this, you know, I was baptized into fill-in-the-blank church. And what that tells me is whatever church that they were a part of before either taught explicitly or somehow gave the impression that that church was the vehicle for salvation. And that if you join what we're doing here, that is what gets you a right relationship with God. So you join our church and then you come to Jesus. And that's backwards according to the gospel. The church does not save. The church is the saved. Let me say that again. The church does not save. The church is the saved. Okay, what happens is, according to Acts 2:47, the Lord adds you to the number of saved people day by day, those who are being saved there in Acts 2. That is the same thing that happens today. This local congregation has zero power to save anybody from their sins. And is that though what we understand in the back of our minds as we have conversations with outsiders, though? Or do we say, well, you really ought to come to Teensboro because at Teensboro we have X, Y, and Z, and you will really connect to that, and you'll really be encouraged. No doubt, there are so many blessings that happen as a result of us being together and doing our work together in this building, but outside of it. But the church is not what saves. Jesus is the one that does that. Are we putting Him at the forefront of our conversations and our messages about what we are and who we do and what we're about? And the third thing that connects to both of these two is that we must think rightly about our places in the kingdom work. We need to have the right attitudes about what it means to be a member of a local congregation. know, if we're thinking denominationally, if we just think of the church as a collection of churches, then all we've got to do to be saved is just to be a part of one of those local churches, right? To be have our names on the membership list, to show up in a pew, and to do the things that we do here. And yet, what did it mean in Acts 9? We talked about this recently. What did it mean in Acts 9 for Paul to be a member of a local church? It's for him to use his relationships with the local Christians there in Jerusalem as a launching pad to go out into the city and the community and to preach about Jesus. And that's the design for the local church. That's why we exist. We don't come together in order to do everything that we need to do as Christians right here in these walls. This is just the launching pad. This is just the pit stop. This is just the refueling station that you and I need to put gas in our vehicles spiritually so that we can go out there and do the real work that we need to do out there as Christians. But sometimes I think we get that backwards in our heads and we think that this, what we're doing here, is the work of a Christian. This is not, at least not in total. So we need to have the right attitude about that. We need to have the right attitude about fellow Christians, too. Do we think, if we're thinking denominationally about the Church of Christ, then we're going to be thinking about our relationships in a very formal, organizational kind of way. And again, we're not that. We are the household of God. We are all part of the same family of saved people. And so we can't look at each other and just think, well, yeah, there's that person that I go to church with. As if church was just a thing, an event that you attend, rather than something that you are a part of. Now we ought to look at each other and think, there's somebody that Jesus died for, just like he died for me. And there's somebody who was washed of his sins or her sins the same way I was. And that person is a brother of mine or a sister of mine. Somebody that I should care about. Not just here, but outside of here. Because Jesus cares about that person so deeply that he did what he did. You remember what Paul said in Philippians 4? There was an argument that was happening between two women in that church. And the whole letter, you know, we read Philippians and we might think, well, it's just everything is joy and peace in Philippi. Well, it wasn't. It wasn't. Remember Paul said, I entreat Euodia and I entreat Syntyche to agree in the Lord. Yes, I ask you, true companion, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. That's how we think about each other in the church, is these other people around me. I'm assuming that all of their names are written down right beside mine in the book that's going to be opened on the final day of the people that Jesus is going to welcome into his eternal home. These are all people that I'm going to live with forever. Yeah. Not just people that I'm going to see once a week on a Sunday morning and then not have anything to do with the rest of the time. We are preparing to all sit at the banquet feast together. Forever. That is the sobering thought. That's who we are. So, the way I want to end this is just to remind you of Ephesians 4. That phrase that is said there so clearly, among all of the other ones in that text, that we are part of one body. We're not a part of a collection of churches that is counted as a small piece of the overall pie. We can't be divided up into groups. And so I'm a little uncomfortable when I hear, and I'm sure that I've said this before too, when I hear Christians say, the church is divided here or here. This is dividing the church. You cannot divide God's group of saved people. It's always going to be there. And so you can break off of it. You can decide to leave it yourself, maybe even take some with you. But Jesus' one group of saved people is indivisible. It is always going to stand intact. The Lord will add people to it. The Lord will add people, will take away people from it if he decides he needs to. But it will always be there. And so our job is to connect people to Jesus so that he can do that, so he can put more people in. And so that's where I want to leave it with you this morning. If you are not part of Jesus' group, if you're not one of the saved, connect to him. He can wash you of your sins. He can bring you to his eternal home if you follow him with your life from this day onward. Or if you need to come back to him, please let us know how we can help, how we can study with you, how we can pray with you, how we can serve you so that you can count yourself as part of this one body. It is not a denomination of anything else. Let's help you become a part of this as together we stand up, we sing the invitation song together.